Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we get excited about PCI Express 4.0, and we take a deeper look at the zombie survival crafting game, 7 Days to Die. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McKay. Darren, what would you do with 64 gigabits per second?
64 gigs per second seems like a lot. Are we talking internet?
We're talking duplex over a 16x link.
So like existing technology, like I could double my bandwidth?
Yeah.
Seems like we talked about this, like a double your pleasure, double your fun thing, right?
Yeah, well, you know, that's for like Saturday night, though.
Saturday night, fun. Yes. But hey, so I think I know where you're going with this. We're talking about PCI Express. That's right, bandwidth. And I tell you, I'm excited about it because lately a lot of things have been using PCI Express. We're talking SSDs, we're talking M.2s, we're talking video cards, Titan.
Also DisplayPort. That's also very important.
And DisplayPort, that's true. So we got all kinds of technology tied up into PCI Express. So where are you going with this?
The PCI Express 4.0 standard officially got released this last week as of this recording.
Nice.
And now, it's been, 7 years in the making?
7 years. Now, you're talking about just like a white paper, right? So there isn't actually like a physical product that I can touch and hold in my cute little hands.
No, not really.
So but it's coming.
So yeah, SIG, they controlled the standard for PCI Express. And it was first released in 2003 with PCI Express 1.0 with 8 gigabits of bandwidth.
And that was revolutionary, I tell you. You know, these days we take bandwidth for granted a little bit, but it's hard to remember back in the days of AGP, which in itself was pretty revolutionary, how much faster the graphics were because it offloaded so much of the workload from your processor where it had previously been.
Do you know what the difference was between PCI Express and AGP? Why it was so revolutionary?
Direct access to the memory, right?
Yeah, it was direct memory access, but it was also bidirectional.
Bidirectional, that's right.
So AGP was a graphics port. It was basically a single point of path, you know, from the CPU directly to the video. So when you were sending video data to your video card, it would be over AGP. But once it got there, there was no way for the video card to tell the CPU that it got the information and it got it correctly.
No, and that's why we have all these new technologies like G-Sync, for example.
Yeah.
Because they can talk.
They can talk. Well, in 2003, they released AGP 1, and that allowed them to do 8 gigabits of bandwidth over a full duplex mode that was 4 gigabits in both directions.
Oh, wait, I think I'm clicking now. Is that where 8X comes from?
Well, kind of where 8X come from. 8X is 8 lanes. So the PCI Express standard is in lanes. So you have 1 lane, 4 lane. These are doubled. 8 lane and 16 lanes.
Okay, so you could right now have PCI Express 16X connectors?
Well, yeah, all the video card connectors are all the big ones on your motherboard.
Oh, duh, I'm totally following you. That's right. So we can have 2 16s, 2 8s, for example, in a modern motherboard. Yeah. Oh, I feel so dumb. It's so obvious now.
Well, and if you go to the multi-GPU index on hardwareasylum.com, hint, hint, you will find out the lane breakdown of every motherboard. So you find out if you plug a video card into slot 1, what does slot 4 turn into in terms of PCI Express lanes? Because they do divide.
So Dennis, let me get this straight. PCI 4.0 promises double the bandwidth. So does that mean we could look forward to 32X PCI Express slots sometime soon?
No, not likely.
No.
You'll still have it over 16 lanes, but you'll have twice the bandwidth of PCI Express 3.0. Which is, you know, in the strange computer world, everything doubles, right? So
right.
PCI Express 1 was 8 gigs of bandwidth, and then we have 16 gigs of bandwidth, and then we have 32 gigs of bandwidth, and then lo and behold, with PCI Express 4.0, we have
64 bits?
Yeah, 64 gigabits.
That makes me think of like a console. That just doesn't sound as exciting. Now, hold on, though. So that's double the bandwidth, so that really is exciting. But are we talking about just the way it uses memory, the way it transfers data? Or we are actually looking at the potential of twice the speed in our video cards?
Yes.
All of that?
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow, that's very exciting.
I mean, if you think about it, okay, we have a faster pipe, so we can move data quicker. Whether or not your video card or your CPU or the game or the program you're using can benefit from that information, that remains to be seen. But the pipe is bigger, so the latency will be less. you would be able to transfer data faster. And since it's bidirectional, the data goes both directions. So you have 32 gigabits up and 32 gigabits back.
So we're looking at a whole new opportunity for video cards that could lead to not just double the speed, right? But we could have that same cascading across. So the 16X slots are faster. The 8X slots are faster.
Yeah, 8X slots are faster. 4X slots are faster. 1X slots are faster. Exactly.
I like it. So hopefully that will mean that they'll see a new revolutionary upgrade, if you will, to all the peripherals that are using PCI Express.
I think you nailed it right on the head there.
Nailed it right on the head.
So
nailed it.
When we think PCI Express, we obviously think video cards because that's the first device in our PCs that we're taking advantage of PCI Express.
Well, that's the most needy thing in most systems anyway, at least once you get past the processor.
The thing that we often forget is that in a modern system like, you know, X99 or a Z370 or something like that, everything is driven off of PCI Express. So in our CPU, we have a certain amount of PCI Express lanes coming off the CPU. We also have in our chipset, we have PCI Express lanes. The PHY chips, like the SATA and also Ethernet and sound, that's also transferred over PCI Express.
So is PCI Express limited by cores? I mean, is this something that we're going to see a better opportunity for things like the Threadripper, the multi-core scalable architectures to take advantage of?
In a word, yes. The Ryzen multi-core scalable architecture that AMD made popular can benefit from faster PCI Express because we will have more threads to handle the data coming in. For instance, we have a 10 gigabit network connection. The faster the CPU can process that data, the faster the network connection can be, and you might be able to reach those 10 gigabit theoretical speeds over Ethernet. The same with storage subsystems like your NVMe drives. The faster you can get the data to the drive and back out of the drive, the faster it'll be.
We all want faster, more efficient, scalable architectures.
Mm-hmm. That is the direction of the future.
So how soon will we see these bad boys hitting the market? How soon do we need to think about upgrading the motherboards?
Well, one of the articles I read at Extreme Tech was speculating on that as well. And if anything happened in the past is can be projected into the future, PCI Express 3.0 was drafted about a year before the manufacturer started to produce devices that enabled it.
So it's probably not the Coffee Lake generation we're looking at, but probably a year from now, maybe next Christmas, we'll be shopping for PCI 4.0, it sounds like.
Yeah, pretty much. The thing is, with PCI Express now, it's all driven by the chip manufacturer. So we have Intel with PCI Express on die. So with Coffee Lake, for instance, had they add PCI Express 4.0, that Core i5 with 16 lanes of PCI Express could be put on a motherboard with like a PLX chip, doubled it, and all of a sudden we have 32 lanes of PCI Express available that can then be four-way SLI at PCI Express 3.0 speeds.
Well, with a little luck, we'll see support from NVIDIA. We'll see support from AMD, Intel, doubling our speed. And who knows what that'll do to the next generation technology.
Several podcasts ago, Darren introduced me to a new game called 7 Days to Die, which is a bit of a misnomer because it's not a new game.
No, it really isn't. And the surprise is actually how old this was. Now, this was one of the earlier successes on Kickstarter for video games. And as you know, I have kind of a checkered past with my Kickstarter video games that has led me to stop backing them.
Well, yeah, you get some games that are just terrible and then some games that are great, but you know, how much of a game can you get out of a Kickstarter in the Kickstarter time frame? You know, you have that 6 or so months afterwards that, you know, people care. And then after that, it's like, well, it's a failed Kickstarter.
Well, I have had some good successes, and Grim Dawn is maybe probably the better or maybe the best out of the ones that I've backed. And there have been some that have been bombs too. But I don't want to dwell on that, but I do want to talk about the slow success that 7 Days to Die has been. And it's been in constant improvement since a shocking 2013 June release date, which I honestly couldn't believe it was that old.
No, well, if you look at the latest Alpha 16, it looks pretty polished in terms of like graphics and interaction.
Yeah, there is some weirdness still in what's going on, but they are constantly adding to the game. And not only that, but they're constantly releasing content. But I think we digress. We should talk about what is 7 Days to Die so folks don't have to go back.
if we look at the Wikipedia, it says the game's event happened after the nuclear war, the Third World War, that destroyed extremely large parts of the world, except for some areas, such as the fictionally country of Nava's game, Arizona. Yeah.
So maybe to build on that, we're talking about a zombie survival game, and the game ships with a default map that is this area, the Navizgan, Arizona area. And it also allows you to procedurally generate maps, which is, I think, the way that we've decided we prefer to play, because the map becomes a little predictable when it's always the same.
Yes.
So in this game, which I would describe as a combination between a first-person shooter survival zombie game that was first made popular by, was it the Call of Duty series added the zombie survival mode?
Oh, yeah, I don't remember that one, but there were several of them. Like, we had Dead Island, which was also a zombie shooter game. The one that we talked about a lot, which was Dying Light, that one came afterwards by the same publisher. And then we have Dead Rising. There were several zombie-esque games that were all based off of a shooter.
That's interesting, because zombies have kind of been the go-to games. But before I go there, I guess I should point out that zombie survival will be in the first half. The second half is the true crafting or Minecraft-style game, which was more unexpected to me. I've kind of avoided playing Minecraft, although it's fairly popular in my house with my kids. But Dennis is not like that. Dennis plays Minecraft and runs a custom Minecraft server with his family occasionally.
And that's one of the parallels that we made in the previous episode where we talked about 7 Days to Die. And I'll try to link that show in the show notes. Had you not listened to it already, shame on you.
So if you're just tuning in, I think what I want to do is try to convince you that you should try 7 Days to Die. And it's on sale frequently. In fact, right now during the Halloween season, it is the lowest price I've ever seen. Maybe it will last long enough for you to get it. But even still, in its alpha state, I would recommend this game. Now, I want to pause and remind folks that this is not a AAA title like the other games that we mentioned, Dying Light, for example.
Exactly.
So you can't expect this to be earth-shaking in its graphics and sound and production values. And I know Dennis has mentioned this, but I want to revisit that this is still, it's not 2013, is it?
No, no. As of this recording, it's what? No, it's even October now.
Yeah,
it's 2017.
So this game is still in alpha. Let's revisit that. June 28th, 2013 was the initial release date. It is almost Halloween 2017. So that is 4 years in alpha. Still has not moved on, in fact. But very playable.
Although when you buy the game on Steam, if you happen to be playing on the PC, if on console, I'm terribly sorry. But
yeah, I would not buy this on the console. We'll talk about that a little more in a minute.
Yeah. But if you buy this game on Steam, you need to go into the properties and make sure that you're loading the latest experimental, which seems super, super scary, but that's the only way that you can get the latest alpha, which brings in the latest features for the game. Otherwise, you are still playing on something that was released in 2015.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because I want our listeners to understand the risks and rewards of playing a game that is not officially released.
Okay.
So, risk. This game may never be finished.
Over 4 years, yeah, probably not.
In fact, the fact that they're continually working on it is honestly a testament to how successful the game is, even in its alpha state. We've seen so many games that do so well in alpha that they don't see a beta, or they stay permanently in an alpha beta state. Currently, PUBG is the great example of that, PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds, that is sitting in a really alpha state because it's so popular that they've been fixing the one map that's out there. And the second map has become sort of a secondary priority. Eventually, they'll get it finished, right? But hopefully, this one is different. Now, this game is developed by a company called Telltale Publishing. That sounds familiar.
No, Telltale is the publishing company on the console.
Oh, that's right. And the developers on this one are called the Fun Pips. The Fun Pimps. But this game is not designed for kids.
No, definitely not.
And there are a couple of reasons for that, but probably the primary reason for that is because it is a bit graphic in its violence.
But Dying Light isn't?
Yeah, but I would argue Dying Light isn't great for kids either. I mean, it's a little bit grim world also. But there's also quite a bit of, shall we say, constructive language in certain portions of the game.
Realistic language.
realistic, maybe is true. It's sort of Mad Maxy future angry old man. Mm-hmm. But there's also
stripper zombies.
Stripper zombies. So a little bit of
cheerleader zombies.
I don't know, crazy violence with semi-naked people in it.
Mm-hmm. Now, oh, the fat, bloated tourist zombie.
Yeah, it's not just the women that are topless and gross.
Something like that.
So anyway, long story short, I like this game a lot, but it is kind of more like Minecraft than I'd like it to be sometimes, and the fact that it can be pretty repetitive.
Yeah, the grind is real, and I believe... I'll let Darren talk about the grind since you've started, five or six games from day zero?
I don't like the
zero.
Grind. Okay, so before we even do that, let's talk about what 7 days to die means. And we've done this before, but 7 days to die describes the game mechanic where the game gives you a 7-day cycle. And on the evening of the seventh day, when it gets dark, it sends you, for lack of a better term, like a boss mode. So you get super mobs to survive. It does this every 7 days, and the sky turns red, and there's thunder and lightning, and if you have a good graphics card, it's honestly pretty darn cool. Mm-hmm. And then the zombies come, and they destroy, and they kill, and it's pretty dang cool every 7 days. And on...
Yeah, the backstory about the 7 days is that there was a virus that got released, and it takes 7 days for it to incubate. And so the zombies that have survived after the World War, they get infected, and take 7 days, and then all of a sudden they become feral, and they start... becoming fast zombies instead of slow zombies, like what we would normally attribute.
I'm impressed that you actually remembered the storyline, because it's so not there, really, when you're actually playing the game. You just have to keep track of the day-night cycle.
Yeah.
And it's very customizable, which is nice, too. So there's kind of a meta story that isn't very well developed, where you wake up naked and afraid, like the show, and you have to learn to survive, and you're getting mysterious messages and missions from this other organization, and it's so not even important to the storyline. I can't even remember the name of it, but they'll give you missions and notes, and they're trying to help you survive. So every 7 days it goes, and I want to say day 49, I think, is when it finishes its difficulty cycle and gives you its last super mob. And since we're in the alpha, there isn't really a lot of difference between these 7 days, but they get progressively stronger. Mm-hmm. And here's the fun part. You can play single player solo, which is difficult.
It is difficult for various reasons, yes.
Or you can play multiplayer co-op, favorite, because I'm a huge fan of co-op gameplay. Mm-hmm. Or you can play versus mode, which is kind of underdeveloped because...
Yeah, it's PvP, but it's kind of mud style. So basically everybody connects to one big server, and you could have like 20, 30, 40 people playing on that one map. And it's all versus all. So you can actually pair up with other people. So you can play at the same time. It'd be allies. Or you could be against the other people. So you could have these wandering mobs of high-level players that go around and try to break into bases and loot them and destroy them and stuff like that. Or you could have people trying to work together, you know, i.e. survival. Mm-hmm. Or survival war, sorry.
So the game is an interesting blend between learning to survive and growing your burgeoning civilization, if you will. Mm-hmm. So at first you have to learn how to make basic clothing. So there's like a very strong crafting element. And that's where the multiplayer co-op really shines, because it has a skills tree that you unlock as you level. And you can, if you have multiple players playing together, specialize, which allows you to get to the cool stuff faster.
Yes.
Also lets you build bases faster, which is part of the Minecrafty appeal of the game. In the game now, where we're at Alpha 16B4B6, I think it is.
B8, actually.
Oh, my gosh. The game is procedurally generating. It has a different biome, so there are different snow, for example, or desert or badlands or forest-type areas, and they have their strengths and weaknesses, primarily the amount of resources they have and also the temperature, which determines what clothing you can wear.
Ironically, biome is a term taken from Minecraft, which talks about the area that you're in. So if you're in a desert biome, it's going to have desert stuff. So you're going to have cactuses and low-flowing, not a lot of trees, basically. Mm-hmm. If you're in a forest biome, you won't see any cactuses, but you'll see trees and grass and stuff like that. And then there's a wasteland biome, which everything has just been decimated. It's pretty crazy. And then there's, I think, a radiation one, which you don't want to go to.
So I don't know that we've made it sound very interesting, because we've kind of approached it from the Minecraft side, which is the boring side.
Yes.
The exciting side is killing zombies.
Killing zombies.
So you start out, like I say, naked and afraid. You learn to build clubs and axes, which is your basic crafting weapon, and bows. And eventually you find firearms and you get the ability to make weapons, 44 magnums, AKs, you name it. Go mow the mobs on your own. And in the last few builds, they've added the ability for you to build a motorcycle. Although I'd say that it's more like a trail scooter, maybe.
They call it a mini bike in the game. And if, you know, if you were alive in the 60s, mini bikes were all the rage.
It reminds me of the early Honda Trail 30, Trail 50, maybe, bikes that I remember from when I was just a kid. Mm-hmm. So it's faster than walking.
Oh, yeah.
Carrying more gear. And some people would say that it fundamentally breaks the survival mode of the game, because it gives you very incredible advanced range. And we still aren't talking about the zombies. What are we doing?
Well, we're talking about 7 Days to Die, which is a zombie survival crafting game, which mm-hmm. is part of the name. And that is a large part of the game mechanic, is this crafting element. So you build a mini bike, you can do more mini bike things. You build weapons so you can actually kill more zombies. You build spikes and stuff to protect your house against the zombie hordes. The zombies during the first 6 days are just kind of there, and they're easily avoidable. Mm-hmm. But if you're stuck out after nighttime, then all of a sudden the zombies start running.
They pick up speed. They pick up strength, power, toughness,
strength, power, and
something.
And numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, normally when you're walking around the wasteland, you see one zombie. They're just running around. Or if you're on a mini bike on the road, the zombie will lay down because I guess they're tired or something like that. And then they'll get up and start chasing after you.
Tired zombies.
Tired zombies, yes. But on Horde Night, which is admittedly only 7 in-game hours of the game, which is at nighttime.
Oh, we should maybe talk about that. So the game has a day-night cycle, and by default it is, I want to say, 50 real-time minutes equals 1 in-game day. And if you don't change it, it's going to give you 10 minutes of that is nighttime, which seems like not a whole lot, but it can be an eternity if you're being besieged by zombies. But the other thing I want to mention too is Dennis is talking about the zombies being pretty easy when you start. And the reason for that is because the zombies are procedurally generated based on the average player level in the game. And what that means is when you first start, you're, of course, a couple level zeros, level one, so you're getting only just basic zombies. They're not very fast or intelligent. As you progress in the game, you start to zombie spawn a little bit, bosses, mini bosses, larger mobs, faster mobs, more advanced zombies, and eventually they'll be releasing zombies that are gargantuan size. Now, those are not out yet, but we've seen the drawings, base destroyers, big siege-type zombies in the future, so we hope those come to help relieve sort of the curve that takes you to the point where once you get strong enough, then the zombies become less of a challenge and more of a mini game, maybe.
The hordes that I've been seeing in my game, because I'm, level 38, 40, something, wherever, I'm seeing mobs where there's 30 zombies all walking in a trail, and they just power through everything. And then once they see you, then some of them peel off, but otherwise they just kind of keep marching along. During the zombie horde night, my game, I have it set to being 4 zombies at a time per player in my game. And at the peak, I've had 3 people playing in my game. So that's 12 zombies that come out at one time based off of the players that are in the game.
And I want to be clear, as you kill them, they continue to spawn. So it's not like you're only going to get 12. That's just the most that it will draw at a time.
There's a rule in the game where it will spawn 300 zombies per night. And if you just kill 3 of them and leave one and let him kite around, then you'll just see that one zombie. But if you kill that guy, then 4 more will come. So if you wipe them all out as fast as you can, then you will get 300.
And of course, subject to change, of course, but you are going to level up as you do things in the game, including killing zombies. And the zombies work in a really good first-person shooter style. So you might have a bow. You're going to be shooting at the zombies. You can hit their hit zones. So it gives you the ability to shoot them in the leg and eventually slow them down or have them lose a leg, shoot them in the arm, shoot them in the head. And of course, the headshot is the most effective. And as you level up, you get to the point where you're blowing them up like pinatas, which is freaking cool, honestly, the first time that it happens. But you're also getting stronger and stronger and faster zombies. You'll get dogs, wolves, birds, snakes, faster zombies, zombies with ranged attacks, zombies with incredible amounts of hit points that do incredible amounts of damage.
Oh, spider zombies that climb walls.
Oh, zombies that climb walls. There's a zombie that if you don't kill her, she will summon more zombies to the area.
Oh, she's the ring zombie.
The screamer.
The screamer.
And I think Dennis has isolated something that's a very good reason why we want to be playing the alpha. Because if you're not playing the most experimental build, you're not going to see all of this, which does also include that new hit detection. And that's also why we want to discourage you probably from playing on the console, at least initially in Fun Flips. If you're listening to this, forgive me. But the problem with the console is that it's not the most current build, and it never will be, because the approval process that it takes to get a patch through on the console is so much more difficult than on the PC, because you can't elect not to get it or get it very easily like you can on the PC. You can choose your build actually on the PC, on Steam at least. Yeah. But anyway, so you're playing a really old, unstable, unfinished, without all the cool stuff build if you buy the console version today. Now, you are investing in the future where someday there'll be a beta and someday there'll be a final release and it may be amazing. But right now, it's already more amazing and much cheaper, I might add, on the PC. So if it sounds interesting, go there. But let's talk a little bit more about the gameplay. And I know, Dennis, we talked about, I've started the game at various stages, oh gosh, 10 or 12 times, to the point where the initial grind is a little bit, I don't know, easy, repetitive. But you don't have that experience, so maybe it would be better for you to just talk about what's starting the game fresh like as a new player.
To set the frame here, Darren had started a game, and he was playing. One night I saw him on Steam. I said, hey, I want to see what this whole 7 Days to Die is about. So I logged in with a camera view so I could watch him play. And he was explaining how he was breaking rocks and going and clearing a building. And I was like, hey, well, that seems interesting. Yeah. And then a couple of days later, I went out and bought it. And then I joined your game that you were playing before.
Oh, yeah. And I was probably, seven or so, five days in, not quite 7 days, if I remember correctly.
I joined and I was like in-game kilometer away from your base.
Because you randomly spawn somewhere in the world, not necessarily right next to your friends or enemies.
Well, and we don't know that they're friends, right?
That's true.
Yeah. So I log in and, you know, the first thing you had me do was, you know, follow the prompts. But then I had to go and friend you so I could see where you were, so I could see where I needed to go.
So you can friend and follow, and that'll allow you to show up on the map. And what Dennis is talking about is the game gives you, like all good games, a base tutorial where it walks you through how to build your initial tools, how to build a bedroll, which becomes your spawn point, how to build your basic clothing, you know, just introductory crafting stuff.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really tell you a lot about how to survive.
No, not in the least. Admittedly, Minecraft also goes through this little mini tutorial when you first start the game. It's like the very first achievements you get is punching wood, which is punching a tree so you can get a block of wood to turn it into planks to make a wooden axe. Well, in 7 Days to Die, you have to go and beat up some grass to get some plant fibers. You have to go find 4 small stones, and you are actually given wood, which I thought was weird. But those 3 items together allow you to make a stone axe to the point where now you can go and break rocks or you can grab more plant fibers and whatnot. Plant fibers make your bedroll. They also make your first set of clothing that you have because, you know, you basically just have a loincloth on when you start the game.
I just have this vision of sitting around in a zombie wasteland weaving pants. But works.
It works. The disadvantage I had was when I spawned in his game, it was nighttime.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I'm like, okay, so it's dark. I don't know where I'm going. And
crouch down, don't move.
Yeah, and that was basically what I did the first night. It's like crouch, and then I'm walking around, and when I find something I can interact with, I pick it up. And I found like a trash pile and some stuff like that. I'm finding like random junk, basically. I didn't know what to do with it. And then when it became daytime, I found out how far away I was from you. And ironically enough, you had died on your way to me in the nighttime. Says, hey, go pick up my pack.
No, that's right. Yeah.
So
I was going to come try to help you. And that didn't work out.
The backpack. So when you are playing the game, you have a backpack of stuff. And that's basically all the things that you collect. unlike in some first-person shooters where you just magically have these deep pockets that allow you to carry around all sorts of stuff. In 7 Days to Die, you get a backpack.
Yeah, and you have limited slots, and it's not quite as limited as you would think because you can carry a pretty huge amount of different items, which is a little bit arbitrary, at least in the alpha. So, example, 500 units of wood fills one slot, but only 5 first aid kits fills one slot. So it's interesting, but it's part of the balance.
And I believe Darren had his game to set so when you die, you lose your backpack, but not your tool belt. So anything you have immediately equipped, you get to keep. So the whole reason I had to go after the backpack is because he had a whole bunch of items that he collected and he wanted to pick them up and take them back to the base.
Some stuff really rare. So you don't want to lose your backpack. Yeah. The game will tell you where your last backpack dropped. But if you die frequently, like some people we know that may be out there listening, then it's only going to tell you where your last backpack is. And then you have to go and try to find your other ones. And hopefully you remember where you died.
Yeah. And they do despawn. Like I found that if you take something from your backpack and drop it, it's in the world for about 30 seconds. So if you don't immediately pick it back up, it despawns, which is, it's an interesting game mechanic. Cause if you drop something, then obviously you didn't want it to begin with. So it should just go away. And that clears up the memory for other things like spawning zombies and dangerous fish and stuff like that. So as I was going through, the tutorial, creating my axe and my bedroll and my clothing, and I was trying to get to Darren's base so I could lay the bedroll down and actually help him defend the base. It took 2 days to get there.
And keep in mind, an in-game day is on average 50 real-time minutes.
So the grind, as he says, is real. And it was not for the lack of trying, because I would go along and I'm finding things. I'm, you know, experimenting with the world. It's like, hey, there's cinder blocks here. It's like, what are those for? It's like, oh, hey, there's a tree here. What can I do with that? Well, then a vulture came down and killed me. And then I got hit with a zombie that I was trying to beat up, and he gave me an infection, which is something that you can cure with something in the game, but eventually it'll turn you into a zombie and then you die and you have to start all over. The one thing that I was not doing was laying the pack down as a spawn point, because I figured, hey, once I get to the base, I'll leave my pack and then I'm good. Every time I die, I would go and respawn somewhere else in the map.
Random, totally random. Yeah. Start the process over. So what makes the game so much fun really is the combination of building your base defenses and then surviving the night. And during the day, finding the best use of your time. And Dennis has talked about this 50 minutes thing, and we've made kind of a big deal out of it, and it is customizable. But what we've discovered is that when we shortened the days to make it so more days passed, you just didn't have enough time to do all the stuff that you needed to do. And in fact, some people lengthen their days even longer before the night happens to give them more time for crafting and building.
Yeah, I found that sometimes you'll sit in a chest just moving stuff around like you're going to make a trader run, which is one of the in-game ways to get money and buy new items. I'll spend like 2 in-game hours just moving stuff into my backpack that I want to sell, because you know it's all over the place. So you end up wasting a lot of time that way. But the thing that I find interesting about it is something that Darren loves so much with one of his castle defense games is castle defense.
That's right. Building the cool defenses. If you do it good enough, you don't even have to even look at the zombies. They just die.
Yeah. So if you build the traps correctly, the zombies will go into them. And the zombie AI changes with each one of the betas that I've noticed.
Yes, it does. They've gotten more intelligent, actually.
Yeah. And they will start burrowing under a base. If you happen to have like a big ramp that goes up to your base, they'll burrow underneath, and eventually the physics in the game will cause it to crash, which is interesting because, you know, much like in Minecraft, you can attach blocks and blocks and then go forever. Well, in 7 Days to Die, each block has its own, what I'm going to call a stickiness factor. So the weight of the block attached to another block, eventually it's going to collapse under its own weight, just like in the real world.
Well, on the other side of the coin, too, is that you might find an existing structure. In fact, you should find an existing structure to build into your base. And hopefully you found a good one. But the ability to build and strengthen that comes with levels. So early on, you can only build wood reinforcements. But as the game progresses, you can reinforce them with iron and then build concrete eventually. And even in the late game, which is something that we have struggled to get to because as they release new versions, we start over to see these new factors, sometimes because we have to and sometimes because we want to see the new features in the game. But there's like electricity, there's solar power, you can get automated defense cannons and stuff, which is all stuff that we haven't gotten to really yet.
It's all part of that grind. I mean, you play the game and you level up, and eventually it's like, to get a smithing perk, you have to be level 40, which, well, what does level 40 mean? Well, you have to add skill points into certain trees, and that's how you build your character. And if you're playing with more than one player, somebody might specialize in mining, somebody might specialize in armor crafting, someone might specialize in another skill. And to collaboratively together, that's how you can progress faster in the game. But if you're playing by yourself, you might be level 60 before you finally get to some of the perks where you can start building your defenses the way you need to be.
In fact, I can tell you that because the game gives loot through a random generator, and some loot is rare and some loot is common.
RNG.
Yeah, the RNG. Yeah, we all hail the RNG in this game, because I actually went in my last solo game over 14 days before I reached the level where I could build any serious defenses or had any firearms. Punishing, one might say.
Yes.
And I stuck with it because of the challenge of it, but I was in a map that was heavily island-based, so it was very difficult to get anywhere, and I did not find any significant buildings to raid in my entire 14-day period before the game updated, and I lost my save, and I was almost grateful.
Yeah.
But we've talked a lot about the crafting, but what about the combat? The combat is very first-person shooter.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of Dying Light. So you have weapons that you can find and shoot, and they work really well. Arrows are another aspect of it. That's something you get early in the game. I took the Dying Light approach where I'm basically trying to be a silent killer. So I've perked into bladed weapons, and so I can go and take my machete and cut off arms and heads and stuff like that. But that means that I have to be very close to the zombies and kite them around so that they don't swarm me and stuff.
Well, that's good, though, because noise attracts zombies, as does carrying food that has a scent. So there's some reality there.
And the other aspect of it, which lends itself well to the type of combat that you're after, are some of the point of interest around the map. So you have these large cities that might have football fields that you can explore. They have these tall high-rises that have parkour elements to get to the top where the tasty loot is. There's one that's it's a building that's under construction, has a big old crane, and if you can get to the top of the crane, there's a weapons crate that you can open.
Yep, special loot there.
And these loot items, these lootables, if you will, they respawn after a certain amount of time, and they're configurable in the game. So I have mine set to 5 days. So after every blood moon, I can go and re-loot those areas.
And that's handy, too, because it gives you the reason to revisit. Otherwise, the game becomes very nomadic, and some people prefer that, where every 7-8 days, they just go build another base somewhere until they are a strong enough level that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and that's probably one of the things I like about the game. I've mentioned this a lot in previous podcasts where I like in-game. Borderlands 2 had a lot of in-game, a lot of replayability, because you could play different areas differently. It was still the same missions, but you could do them in different order, or you could try to get certain achievements as you're playing through the game. Dying Light had different tracks that you could take, and that gave a lot of replayability. And in 7 Days to Die, much like in Minecraft, it depends on how you want to play. So if you wanted to do pure castle defense, you could find a spot in the middle of the desert somewhere, build a house, and then just kind of live and fend off the zombies when they come in. Or you could take a I Am Legend approach, live in a certain big city, and then every day go out and loot a different building.
I think what I want you guys to most get out of this is the different ways the game can be played, and what an incredible value the game really is if you're into that style of game. In early access, the game is cheap. $29 is the MSRP right now, and it's regularly cheaper than that. I mean, at the point where sometimes it's down into single-digit price. Now, that's uncommon, I'll give you, but this is a game that I think has the potential to be a AAA title in its future, if it ever gets there. We're talking about a small studio working on a small budget. They've released a game that's very playable in several different ways, and I honestly find myself going back to it over and over and over again and restarting the game because I think, oh, I could have done this differently, or oh, if I'd have been in a better area, or oh, maybe I should try a city, or oh, maybe this cabin is the way. And there's always something interesting about it. And there's just enough crafting to make it challenging, but not enough for it to be boring and repetitive all the time. So if that sounds like your cup of tea, I'd encourage you to check that out. Get your build together and let us know if you survived 7 days to die.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2017. Thanks for listening.